Well, happy Thursday. Hope the week has been good for you thus far, and now we're anticipating a weekend with all kinds of fun and frivolity and tomfoolery going on here, but also some pretty worthwhile things as well, and we'll be talking about those throughout the rest of the week here on WFSU. But it's time now for Perspectives. This is our weekly conversation where we get to examine all kinds of neat things going on in our community and people who are making a difference, and as we call it, good people doing good things. And we always invite you to be part of the conversation, no matter what it may be about, at 850-414-1234. We do have a long-distance number if it is long-distance from you to us and you have a landline phone. 800-926-8809 is that. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email, or send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. And a quick program note, you notice the Kavanaugh hearings are not on the air right now, but we are streaming them live, so you can go to our WFSU media Facebook page, and there is a link right there, and you can pull it up and you can stream that so you don't miss a moment of that action. You know, more than a decade ago, two young ladies in Tallahassee, both the children of Holocaust survivors, pulled their experiences into what would become an ongoing outreach well beyond their adopted hometown. Rita Miller Blank and Barbara Goldstein visited area classrooms, and they provided the kids with a very unique and personal perspective on the Holocaust. And they sponsored the county's first essay contest on the Holocaust, and they also forged the Holocaust Education Resource Council to continue and expand upon those programs. Today on Perspectives, we're going to find out what is coming up on that organization's very busy calendar in the weeks ahead, and we're going to learn a lot more about the organization itself. And let's go around our table here and introduce you to the folks who will be part of that conversation today. Dan Lesham is promoting the 25th anniversary film screening of Schindler's List, which is coming up on the 7th of October. That is a Sunday, and we'll be telling you more about that. And Dan, welcome to Perspectives. Good to have you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Right next door to you, we say hi to Linda Davey, who taught the Holocaust for 18 years and received the Educator Award last year. Congratulations, Linda, and welcome.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
We always try to be in good taste on this program, and so we have a lady with us who can provide some reinforcement on that score in abundance. Susan Turner, event caterer of Food Glorious Food and Humanitarian Award recipient. Congratulations to you too, Susan.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
It is wonderful to have you here too. And of course, we could not do all this without the HERC co-founder, Barbara Goldstein. Barbara, thanks so much for coming here. And boy, you are a busy lady nowadays, aren't you?
Just busy planning all our programs, as we always do. Got to make things happen.
Well, for those folks who aren't familiar with the organization itself, I tried to give you a little run-up there in our introduction, but the idea, because you're not a Tallahassee native, and neither was your cohort in putting this together, but what was the spark plug? What was the impetus for founding the Holocaust Education Resource Council?
A couple of things. Well, we knew that as about 10, 15 years ago, we saw that the schools were needing a lot of help, and both Rita and I were getting called to schools, and we were going to different classes and busy. And then Rita and I realized we were running around, and we said, let's just start one day, and everybody can come together. And that's how our workshops got started. And what happened is in 2005, we met with, then at that time, it was superintendent of schools was Bill Monfort. Now he's a senator. And he said, yes, right away. And so we started our first workshop, and Rita worked really hard at making this happen. We had a professional Holocaust specialist come in from Miami, and that was the beginning in 2006. And since then, we've had workshops every year. And in fact, on October 8th, we'll be having our, 13th workshop. And we have already 50 teachers registered from Leon County and beyond. And we have the education director from the Florida Holocaust Museum will be presenting the whole day, many lessons and going through testimonies, and the teachers will walk away with a bag of books, as they always do, and they're very excited. And this started from the mandate. This was actually brought forth because in 1994, Florida Holocaust education was legislated. And it's required in all school districts and to incorporate lessons based on public school and the school instruction, but the teachers are really lacking the materials, are lacking a lot of curriculum in 67 counties, and we're able to reach North Florida in many ways that they wouldn't have had before.
Yeah, and again, as we get further and further away from the actual historical event, so many of the teachers have lost whatever personal connection they may have had to the Holocaust that they could bring to that instruction.
That's true.
And so that's kind of where HERC has to help out there.
But I just want to share a fast story. So we're very busy in the school district and at Tallahassee Community College also. We're forging a strong partnership with there. And one of the faculty said to me the other day in the middle, after a Holocaust lesson in her class, one of the students came up and said, "How come I didn't learn about this before?" And it's been very profound in every classroom. And so this is what we've been working on very hard.
Let me ask you as an educator, Linda Davey, here. How difficult is it to, I guess, get this to resonate with today's kids? Here's something that happened to their way of thinking 10,000 years ago and may have no personal relevance. How do you make it alive and engaging?
To them. You make it live to them by making it real. These are real people who were involved. Holocaust education isn't just about the facts and the numbers and the names and the dates. It's about people. It's a human issue. It is an issue that shows the consequences of hatred, the consequences of prejudice. It is the education of character development. Kids who have learned anything about the Holocaust should at least come away with some idea that they are going to be sensitive to ethnic jokes, racial slurs. They need to be aware that all this happened in the past, could happen again. I mean, you know, Barbara made reference to the fact that so many people don't know about it. Well, there was a survey that was done last spring, I believe, and one of the most scary things about it said that more than one-fifth of millennials, people 18 to 34, hadn't heard of or weren't sure they'd ever heard of the Holocaust. And yet the Holocaust teaches us that man can be extraordinarily inhumane, can try to marginalize an entire group of people, say they are other, say they are inferior, and therefore they don't have the right to exist. And that is what we need to teach our students, is that they need to be sensitive to the idea that all humans are human, whether they like them, whether they care about them, whether they understand them or not, they are human beings and deserve respect and honor. That's the lesson of the Holocaust.
One of the most powerful ways of imparting that lesson, of course, is through the arts, particularly the cinematic arts. And Dan Lesham, we are going to see once again an absolutely remarkable, heartrending, and soaring film, Schindler's List. I can't believe it's been 25 years since that was produced.
Yes, it's kind of an amazing trajectory that that film has had, not only as a cinematic moment that had its impact back in 93, 94, but the way in which that film has influenced lots of things since then. So, for instance, most genocide films that have been shot and screened since then are in some kind of dialogue with the way that that film was, the story was told, the filming was done, the tone, the mood, and how to tell an effective narrative about something as unimaginable and horrific as the Holocaust. It also had a profound impact on education. And even jumping off from Linda's words just a moment ago, the idea that the Holocaust is, that it draws some of its or most of its significance from individual stories wasn't the way we thought about the Holocaust for the most part before the movie Schindler's List. The movie Schindler's List was the first time that most Americans ever really saw Holocaust survivors. And the way the movie ends, when there's a coda which shows the real survivors laying a stone on the Schindler's grave in Jerusalem, that was the first time that people really saw Holocaust survivors. And that movie and one of its effects, which was the creation of the USC Shoah Foundation that I can talk about in a minute, that movie instituted that approach and that sensitivity and that understanding that history can't be told from 20,000 feet above. You can't find all of the story in the documents or the photographs or the diaries from the time period, because history happens to individuals. And the way in which traumatic histories like genocide and mass violence shape and, in a sense, warp the lives and the identities and the perspectives of individuals is what creates such a profound impact.
We'll be back and continue this discussion in just a moment here with the members of the Holocaust Education Resource Council and going over some of the upcoming events that they have on. We're going to take a quick time out, though, because we need you to support programs like Perspectives here on WFSU and the entire line of programs from NPR that you enjoy day in and day out. Here's someone to tell you about it. We are back on Perspectives. Thank you for being a part of it on the radio and the multiple ways we have to communicate nowadays. You are welcome to join the conversation at 850-414-1234. Members of the Holocaust Education Research Council here with us today. And a reminder, you can always find the program online at WFSU.org. Just click on radio, pull down the programs menu. Perspectives is right there. We try to have it up online and archived semi-permanently for you, usually within 24 hours of when the program actually airs. Back here again with Dan Lesham here with Schindler's List. It is rescreening now on Sunday, October 7th, right?
That's correct. At 1 p.m. at the ASCII
Student Life Cinema.
At FSU. And I think it's remarkable. They did a remastering of the film for the 20th anniversary, I believe, and they might have done some more work on it. And it's amazing how well this film stands the test of time just on its own, without considering any of its legacy or its impact in various fields. But I think that one of the most important aspects of Schindler's List is that it was the cultural event that really opened Americans and the world's eyes to the importance and significance of the Holocaust, which was important for certainly the Jewish community and the Holocaust survivor community. But it's perhaps its greatest success is that it was able to translate that trauma and make it universal so that it could be grasped by people all around the world. And through my years of working in Holocaust commemoration and comparative genocide research, I've now heard from survivors of multiple other genocides and mass atrocities, like survivors of the comfort women system during World War II in East Asia, survivors of the genocide in Srebrenica, saying, we want our Schindler's List. We want that one seminal cultural global moment when people come to see us with our suffering and understand the impact it has had on our culture and our community and on our lives.
Right, and it resonated in Florida, Barbara Goldstein, led to
this. This is what created the Holocaust mandate to be repassed in the legislature, and this is how the whole education started with the Department of Education, actually. And there's a task force now that has funding, little bit of funding, but there's some money there to help. And the rest of what we do is for our fundraising. That's why it's so important with this dinner coming up on October 23rd that we hope people will be coming to help support Holocaust education in our schools. All the money and the proceeds goes right back to the schools for Holocaust education.
Someone who knows a lot about that, Susan Turner. So tell what's on the menu, Susan? What can we look forward to?
Well, we are trying to focus the best of Jewish dishes. And one thing we've done in the past and presently is we have looked at, there are two books that are based on recipes from Holocaust survivors. And the recipes are great, and they're very typical Jewish dishes from all over Eastern Europe. But the stories behind each recipe will tear at your heart. And we don't want to tear at your heart at the dinner, but we are memorializing, you know, the dishes and the survivors by serving some of these dishes. So we have things like kugel, which comes from Eastern Europe. We have a whole Mediterranean station. We have a Jewish deli station, which will be your typical American Jewish delicatessen type food. And, you know, because of the diaspora, Jews were scattered all over the world. So wherever they went, they took on the foods of that area. They had to cook with ingredients that were available, and yet they had the kosher laws that determined how they treated those dishes. So we've incorporated all that. And then, of course, we end with a wonderful dessert station, and sweets are just very much a part of Jewish cuisine, and it's comfort food at its height. And so we have lots of good things to serve everyone and to commemorate the memory of these people through the food.
That's coming up on the 23rd.
Correct. Right. And we have a wonderful speaker who will be there, and it's a very interesting story. His name is Dr. Bernd Walschlager, and he is actually a doctor that was born in Germany, and his father was a Nazi. And when he was 14, he found out what his father had done and been awarded by Hitler, and he went through a life change and has converted to Judaism and will be here to tell his story. And I want to just add to that, don't forget to make your reservation. We are we have still seats left at this dinner. Go to the HERC website, and please do that. And Susan's food will be for everybody to enjoy. And I have to definitely plug that seven-layer cake and the black and white cookies. That's one of my things I need to plug.
Straight out of Sabar's in New York.
That's okay, but it's the best.
Linda Davey, I got to ask you, we are now seeing a resurgence, a strange resurgence in anti-Semitism, but even beyond that, the demonization of any other. Pick your other. It makes no difference whether it's immigrants from the South or whether it's people of a different political persuasion. The divisiveness and the lack of, I guess, empathy that suddenly is back in fashion again, dare I say that, from an educator's viewpoint, what's going on here?
Well, a lack of care, a lack of respect, a lack of honor of individual people as human beings, basically. Just a lot of, it's all about me, and I don't know who you are, and I really don't care, and you're different from me, and therefore you're, as you said, the other. And that labeling of people as the other has been, you know, a tragic and a devastating thing throughout history. It's not current. It's not new in history for sure. But it is one of the lessons of the Holocaust is to recognize that for centuries, the Jews had been labeled as the other by their neighbors. And therefore, they were to be sent aside, put aside, pushed aside, and eventually persecuted and then eventually executed. And that otherness, you know, again, it's something that all teachers should be very aware of. And teachers, Holocaust education also helps the teachers become better citizens because they're more sensitive to when they hear their students saying things that shouldn't be said or demeaning other people, and they should speak up. And students then who are familiar with the Holocaust realize that it is a consequence of years and years and years of just putting people down and setting people aside and becoming conditioned to allowing that to happen. And that's what we want our students not to be bystanders, but to become upstanders and stand up and speak out whenever they hear somebody else being defiled.
That's got to be one of the hardest lessons to pass along.
Well, there are several lessons of the Holocaust that I found. You know, again, it's not just the objective history, but it's the character development of the individual who is learning it. It is a lesson of vigilant democracy, because if you look at the Holocaust, you realize how quickly Hitler and his bunch took away the human rights, the freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom to work. All of that happened within 2 months of Hitler coming to power. And so we have to be extremely vigilant in our democracy to protect our rights and to be aware of them. And it's also the third lesson that I see the Holocaust teaches is one of resilience against evil, that people who resisted this evil, whether they be 10 years old, 14 years old, 5 years old, 50 years old, whatever, they had to stand up against a whole society that, and, you know, whether they were Jewish, Christian, whatever, they stood up in small ways, in large ways, and did resist. And our teenagers today and our students today can realize that they can resist evil as well.
But that happens not only on the elementary and the middle school and right. The high school level, but right. Also the collegiate level. Dan Lesham, to talk about what's going on in Florida State and the Hillel group that you're involved with there.
Right. So I am the executive director of Hillel at Florida State University, which is the foundation for Jewish life on campus. We are quite lucky. I feel like at Florida State, there is remarkable tone and community there. I think that it's both top-down and ground-up, that both the high-level administrators value and appreciate and place a high priority on civil discourse and students getting along and trying to smooth out divisiveness when it occurs, not to stifle contradictory speech, but to moderate tone so that conversations can continue happening. And the students are amazing. I think that being someone who is maybe a generation or two older than the students at this point, college looks completely different from how it looked when I was a student. This is the second or third campus I've been heavily involved in where it seems, again, like the students are leaps and bounds more sophisticated in terms of diversity and getting along interculturally than do the staff and the faculty, who are just of a different generation where we weren't taught and shaped with some of the tools that Linda has been talking about that reinforce not only that there are differences, but that place a high value on seeing through those differences and engaging.
You bring up an interesting dichotomy. Maybe, Barbara, you could react to this here, because we think, as Dan said, this generation is kind of omni-everything, that whether it's race or culture or sexual background, it's all the same. The kids get along. Kumbaya, and yet Charlottesville. And those were young people, mostly.
Yeah, it's really concerning today because there's so much. I'm on the ground a lot in the schools and the high schools, and there's a lot of not talked about issues going on in the schools that we're trying to address. And but we come at it from a better way. I don't want to use the word positive, a better way. Like, I want to explain that we have this new poster set we're bringing to the schools, and I just want to share with you that the words of each one of them are so meaningful that this is how now I'm bringing them into a lot of the civics classes. And they talk about compassion and cooperation and courage and ingenuity and integrity, moral leadership and self-sacrifice and social responsibility. And these are the words that we're trying to create, this moral compass, that the things that are going on in some of the middle and high schools today, we want to bring it into a positive way, and the students are getting it as we move into the classrooms. But you have to keep up because every year there's new students and there's new teachers.
And you have the external, if not motivators, influences that are, oh, someone is different from you, they're bad. Someone mm-hmm. is just like you, they're good.
Well, I want to answer that because the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum just opened up an exhibit called America and the Holocaust. And it's really frightening what happened in America during the Holocaust. But that's a whole nut that could be going on to talk about it. But today there's so much media, overwhelming media information. And that's another thing that we're trying to address with the students, is what to believe in the media and what not to believe. Because this is what came down to even during the Holocaust, and the Nazis were really good at propaganda. So we're really trying to process this with the students.
And to encourage them to seek not just diversity of associations, but diversity of opinions.
Correct.
If I could speak just momentarily about the Charlottesville incident that you raised. I think that it's important to note that, by and large, the violent white power protest that occurred there was not comprised of students from UVA, the campus they marched through. In fact, UVA students were most often the victims of violence. And most of the people protesting were coming in from all corners of the country, because they felt strongly enough about white supremacy that it's no object to travel across country, even if it's at a great personal expense. So one of the important things I think we need to understand from that is that all societies at all times throughout all of history have people who are fanatically full of hate, people who go to sleep hating the group that's on their mind and wake up full of hate. to me, that's a product of an illness, whether individual or cultural. It exists. What's changed is that those individuals from all over the country felt they had a platform and a moment to come together and speak and to show pride in their ideas instead of hiding their ideas. So in terms of a cultural moment or a cultural awakening, what I think we need to realize is what's happening with the tone of discourse and debate in our country, as you alluded to earlier, as did Linda, that how and why are we giving the signal to people full of hate that now is a good time to come forward and you will get a fair hearing of your repugnant ideas?
Well, from the lady whose mantra is food is love, Susan, if I could ask you, a story that I just learned about yesterday maybe connects here. This is a former elementary school teacher up in DeKalb County, just mm-hmm. outside of Atlanta. And 5 years ago, she was teaching at an elementary school there. And it was the first week of classes. She's meeting with another teacher in a room close to the school office. And suddenly the door bursts open and there is a young man with an AK-47 and announces to the two teachers that today is the day that you will die. And instead of resisting, instead of devolving into hysterics or whatever, and this lady said she just had a really, really bad couple months. Her husband just left her and the bank was foreclosing on her house, a whole bunch of things. And instead of just rolling over and say, okay, fine, take me first, she engaged the young man. I don't know how exactly she did it. Perhaps, Linda, you're a teacher. You might be able to tap into this. And got him, number one, distracted from his mission and got him to sit down and talk with her, put down the gun, and ultimately peacefully surrender to the police. She engaged him on a different level than the way that he was approaching her. Is maybe that part of the secret. You don't give as good as you get. You find some other way of dealing with the hatred.
Welcome to the table. Tables, dinners, food have brought people together since biblical days. You know, and it's a wonderful platform to exchange ideas in an atmosphere that's not combative, because, you know, the pleasures of a good meal will lift your spirit, and it makes you feel better about everybody at the table, hopefully. And so I think that is a wonderful part of this dinner, is taking ethnic food, serving it, introducing people to it, having discussion, you know, that is open and friendly and maybe new to a lot of people. But I think at the table, always at the table. I mean, it just creates an atmosphere that is open to whatever ideas are out there. There is a wonderful book called In Memory's Kitchen. And this is a book that came out of the camps. And the women would sit around at night and they would talk about their favorite dishes.
Let's talk about that in just a second here, Susan. Hang on. You know, programs like Perspectives are only possible with the support of the folks who listen to and enjoy them. So we're going to take a little quick time out here to give you an opportunity to help provide that support. Here's someone to tell you how to do that, and we'll be right back with you here on Perspectives. We are back on Perspectives. We have a bunch of activities that are coming up relative to the Holocaust Education Resource Council in the weeks and months ahead. And let's pick up on a delicious thought that Susan Turner with Food Glorious Food was talking about, since you're the event caterer for the upcoming Remembrance Dinner on the 23rd. A recipe book, a cookbook? What is that, Susan?
This is the cookbook that is based on the survivors' recipes. And it is full of stories that if you read them by themselves and they weren't part of this, you'd say, that could never have happened. How could these people survive? And yet they did. And we have recipes that we're making now that prove that, you know, they were witnesses, they went through it, they were there. And it's amazing.
And
it
what's
is just
that book
incredible.
Called?
This is called Miracles and Meals. And there are actually two volumes. There is another volume. And, you know, there's a tremendous number of Holocaust survivors that still live in Florida. Of course, they're aging. But this is just a wonderful book to have. It'll be a history book for a long, long time.
Well, one of many that are available, right, Barbara?
Yes. We're going to be selling this one at the dinner. And just want to add, this is all tying into Rita at the very – totally, because Rita's mother and aunt are actually survivors. Actually, her parents are survivors, but her story is in the book. I don't know the page. Susan's going to find the page right now. And we sell the book for $36 at the dinner. So with that said, I want to share that Rita Blank started this in a very wonderful way with this message to share from her. It says, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." And that was quoted by Margaret Mead, but Rita always came to our meeting saying that because she felt that our little group was going to make a difference, and it definitely has. Can I add one more thing? Okay. So with that said, we're jumping ahead, and we're very excited because Tallahassee Community College has willingly and supportedly, thanks to President Murdaugh, a building at Tallahassee Community College that we're growing into, and everybody can contact us and come visit it. And then starting in February, we're going to be premiering a Holocaust Education Week. Launching at Tallahassee Community College on February 4th, and we're very excited. There'll be a film featured screening named Ava about a Holocaust survivor named Ava Kors who survived the Auschwitz concentration camp and the medical experiments by Dr. Mengele. And we'll have the director of the film coming to speak, along with Dave Lawrence, who actually traveled to Poland with Ava this past summer. And then on Wednesday night, February 6th, I'm very excited to announce that the author and scholar Peter Hayes will be coming to speak about his book, Why? Explaining the Holocaust. And this book is being used by many educators right now as the basis and the groundwork for Holocaust education.
Well, speaking of education, Linda Davey, since you are an award-winning educator when it comes to imparting the story of the Holocaust to young people, how do you teach other teachers to essentially do what you do to bring these tales to life and make them resonate with the kids?
Teaching teachers? Today's teachers, as you mentioned earlier, are very young, and many of them have not had a very thorough understanding of the Holocaust to begin with. So again, I feel as an educator, they need to have a little bit of the objective facts, so I try to teach them what happened. But more importantly, they need to know why it happened so that they can impart the whys and the hows to their students so that their students will then go away with the true lessons of the Holocaust, which is human dignity and human respect for one another. Teachers are very, very impressed. Usually they're very shocked because they've heard of the Holocaust. They know of the Holocaust. They know it was something that happened and 6 million people died, blah, blah, blah. But to hear the individual stories and to realize that this was a one-by-one, human-by-human, person-by-person, child-by-child, that is how the story gets told in reality. I wanted to come back to one thing that you were talking about, the hatred. And what we are finding in today's world is that many of us are so attacked by so much hatred, or not personally attacked perhaps, but just in the world, in the media, that we become very indifferent and very apathetic. And those are the two things that are probably more dangerous than hatred itself, is the indifference and the apathy. And that's another thing that we try to do through education, is to make students aware they cannot be apathetic. They must be aware whenever human dignity is attacked or challenged that they have to stand up and speak out.
The old mantra that all it requires for evil to persist is for the good to do nothing.
Edmund Burke, yes.
All right. And Dan, if I can ask you about the balance between resistance and passivity when it comes to dealing with the hatred, because there are those who say the best way to counter hatred is essentially don't react, and because that will pull back some of the fuel that hatred needs to continue, while others will say give as good as you get because it must be stopped now, it must be stopped here.
Right. So I would definitely just to note, first of all, that for about 5 years, I worked in education around Holocaust denial. which is a fringe movement led by anti-Semites and white supremacists to try to argue that the Holocaust never happened. And working in that field, you're constantly concerned, if I talk about Holocaust denial, am I giving them more air or more publicity than if I don't talk about them at all? But what ultimately tipped the balance is that Holocaust deniers are on YouTube. They are editing Wikipedia articles. They are finding their way into media in thousands of ways, even more than the videos they create that have obvious white power identification. We found through our research that they were going and adding comments to student, to high school student videos that were assigned as part of a class assignment to five-minute film about the Holocaust, and deniers were putting 2,000-3,000 anti-Semitic slurs in the comment field. So I feel that the idea of saying nothing isn't very effective. At the same time, I don't believe in debating Holocaust deniers or debating white supremacists, that you have two competing worldviews that don't have enough in common to form the basis of a conversation. But I do think it's crucial that you respond to hate by doing as much pro-social activity as you can. That has to do with education, like Linda is talking about. That has to do with building community in your community, with people you know, informing them, sharing thoughts and ideas, that there are ways that societies can, in essence, inoculate themselves against that kind of hatred erupting in such big numbers. You know, the CDC talks about this with vaccination. Like, what's the percentage of people in a population that need to be vaccinated to stop an epidemic from happening? And it's enough that 75% or 85%, I'm not an epidemiologist, are vaccinated, and that guarantees that there won't be a huge eruption. So our challenge as Holocaust educators is, how do we sensitize 75, 80% of our population to ensure that whatever hatred or violent ideation or ideology arises, we have the majority that can smother those flames.
So, Dr. Goldstein, I think what I hear you saying is that you are part of the inoculation process when it comes to HERC and these sorts of activities that you got going on here in the community.
Exactly. I mean, so this November 9th will be the 80th anniversary of Kristallnacht. And what better way that at Leon High School, the class, the drama class is going to be performing a play about the U.S., about the St. Louis. It's about a ship of refugees that was turned back from Cuba and was not allowed to land in the United States and come and have safe harbor. And so the name of the play is 987, because there were 987 passengers on the ship, actually. So this is being performed at Leon High School at November 9th and 10th at 7 p.m. in the and the tickets are available at Leon High School.
Oh, that's true. Who's doing the directing on that?
It's actually student directed, but the teacher is Leah Marshall. Okay.
I kind of figured. Okay.
You know, yeah. So she and I are working together on this. Actually, I'm working with her on this.
Yeah, that was a particularly poignant and tragic part of
So talk
America's
about talk
legacy.
About this, and this ties into immigration. This ties into refugees. We tie this one topic into so many subjects. It's great, but it's what we don't want to forget, that 937 Jewish refugees did not be able to land in this country because they were turned away.
Yeah, and ultimately were repatriated back to Germany.
Correct.
We know what happened there.
Yeah, so. Right.
So, and do any students, Linda, come to you and just say, "Oh my God, I feel so guilty." Somehow I feel that whatever is lurking inside me is a part of this horror. Did they ever make that jump?
Never had them made that jump, but usually they make the jump as, I need to do something with my life. And I've had sophomore boys, which we all know what sophomore boys are like, say that, you know, their friends spend all their time on video games. I need to do something. I've had a senior girl come and say that my class was very difficult, not because it was hard, but because it made her really think about who she was and who she wanted to become. So it's an internalizing thing. And I haven't heard them say that I feel so guilty, but they look forward because they have a life in front of them and they need to act on this life which comes in front of them. Going back to statistics, I wanted to just add something about this whole idea of, could it happen again? That survey that I mentioned earlier, 58% of Americans believe that something like the Holocaust could happen again. 58%. So unless we are vigilant and unless we are aware and unless we are resilient, who knows what the history is. What the history books will be telling in another 100 years.
And that's where everyone comes in here on whether it's your remembrance dinner that's coming up, Susan, or the teacher program on the 8th or the reshowing of Schindler's List on the 7th. And for those folks who are of a mind to self-educate, a wonderful resource out there is definitely YouTube. I have started pulling up all kinds of documentaries from World War II and my own research to see just exactly what happened and how we viewed the Holocaust in 1945, right after the discovery of the camps, vis-a-vis what we're thinking about today. That's an education, too.
Yes, with the caution that YouTube is a minefield and one needs to be a very critical viewer, which is why in doing education with high school students and middle school students, I never encouraged anyone to look at YouTube because it can be that you have extreme views on there as well. So be critical of what you're receiving. Look for the source. But now that Tallahassee has a truly phenomenal Holocaust Resource Center with a space and a library, both books and video, I would encourage everyone to consider a pilgrimage there if you want to really get some good education. And a list of faculty both at FSU and TCC who are experts and interested in this topic that can be interlocutors for you. And it's important to also say that after the screening of the film Schindler's List on October 7th, there will be a panel discussion. So people will have a chance to ask questions and engage in conversations about what happened at the time. It opened the same year as the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. It opened the same year as the genocide in Rwanda and in the former Yugoslavia. So our world has changed a lot since then and because of what happened then. And so I think it'll be a fascinating conversation.
Okay, Linda Davey, final thought from you, ma'am.
Final thought from me on Holocaust education. Well, the ultimate lesson taught by Holocaust education is to preserve and proclaim the value of every human being, to speak up when these are denied, to remember that no human is more human than another, that every human being has value, that indifference and apathy are more dangerous than hatred. You cannot stay silent in the face of hate, and that all of us as individuals are responsible for the dignity, the freedom of all we meet, whether or not we like them or understand them.
Great lesson for everyone, not just educators there. Susan, looking forward to your great riposte on the 23rd at the Remembrance Dinner. So you all ready to go?
All ready to go. Just, you know, continue to bring people to your table and share ideas.
Okay, and remember that as we gather around our own tables here, let's try to find common ground before we get into... now, so who do you think is going to win the election? Then Barbara Goldstein, again, thank you for all
that
you do.
Thank you for everything and to everybody to support our programs and just try and attend and bring your friends. Thank you.
All righty. And again, coming up on October 7th, the reshowing of Schindler's List on the campus of Florida State University. We have the teachers program coming up on October 8th and then on the 23rd, that remembrance dinner. And you can go to HERC's website. That is H-E-R-C, by the way. And all of the information that you will need is posted right there. To all of you, thank you so much for coming in on Perspectives, and an invitation for all of our listeners to, again, during these final days of our Pledge-a-thon, please be generous and support programs not only from National Public Radio, our entire panoply of NPR programming, but also programs like Perspectives and Capitol Report and all that that you hear on WFSU. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance today by Evan Rossi, and we thank Lydell Rawls for doing his thing back there behind the glass on the phones and email machine, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we'll find out what the Blueprint 880 initiative is all about and what it means to us right here in Florida's capital city. That's coming up next Thursday right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.